In today's episode with Gary Arakilian, you're going to hear how setting your business up right, both strategically and financially, could really set you on your goal to financial freedom. There's lots to learn, so many terms. Gary Arakilian brings us all of this insight and knowledge, and I think it will really help you in your planning. Day we've been waiting for. I mean, I hope our listeners know what a treat we're in for this two-part series, because I don't think we're going to cover everything we got to cover in one part.
It's great to see you, Court.
Thank you.
It really
you
is.
You have just been such a force in our lives and helped me navigate some really great stuff, which we're really not talking about me today. We're talking about kind of what you do. And I want business owners to come away from this knowing that there's so many options for their business. You know, obviously, if you have a good growth-oriented, profitable business, there's always choices. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about this world of M&A, which we're going to talk about, people are nervous by choices. So I want you to just jump in and tell us, you know, you got this business, you're running it, things are going great, and all of a sudden, like we've all had happen, you get mm-hmm. the email or the phone call from the company that wants to buy your business. Mm-hmm. And why does that set off the alarm bells in so many, and sort of what should they be thinking about?
It's a great question, Court. It's something that happens every day. And most entrepreneurs start their business with a desire to create something great. They're not sure what the end game is yet. Some folks know. But generally, they're thinking about it in terms of, how do I do this? So they have this idea, and they know that they want to succeed. And what happens in the middle is really where rubber meets the road. And they've got to execute and get it done. If they do it well, they catch the attention of folks in the industry. And invariably, somebody will reach out and ask, either to invest, or to acquire, or to partner, or align. And it is scary, because now I'm taken out of my game. My job number one is to run and grow a sustainable and profitable company and take market share and take care of my customers, build for my employees, return to my community, all the things that entrepreneurs want to be able to do. If I step out of that and look at a transaction, it almost feels a little selfish. It feels like I'm doing it for myself and our shareholders. But that's exactly what you started the business for in the first place, to take in investment, whether yours and outside, and grow a sustainable business, make a change, disrupt an industry, and give back. Mm-hmm. So folks have their own mission of what they want to accomplish, and they go down that path, but that unsolicited offer, boy, it feels great. It feels nice to be wanted.
Yeah. It
feels nice to be appealing. What they don't know is sometimes it doesn't work as well as it seems. And that process can take them completely out of their game if they're not careful.
So people get unsolicited offers. Everybody loves to be wanted. And I hear so many people, I'll ask them, well, great, what'd you do? Who'd you call? Who's your advisor?
Mm-hmm.
Who'd you call when you got that call? You didn't call that person back, did you? And they go, oh, yeah, I called them back. And I gave them my financials.
Yeah,
and like
we sat down and talked to them.
Gave them my top customer list, and my head goes crazy.
Yeah.
Why should people think about, when the day that email comes in or the phone call comes in, like what would a responsible entrepreneur, what would their next steps be?
Generally, they end up calling their accountant or their lawyer and saying, here's what happened. What should I do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk to them is what generally happens. And they decide they want to do that. So as a professional service advisor, they're there to support the entrepreneur. The reality is an entrepreneur needs to always be thinking about their liquidity. They need to be thinking about not necessarily exit planning, but how do I become so appealing in the market that I control my destiny? This is life by design in everything that we do, personally and professionally. So if we're going to build a business and we want to create an empire, or we want to create an offering and we want to be able to build it so that we can make a difference and disrupt what's going on or improve what's going on, then we have to think about what's the sustainability of that as we grow it, and how will that appeal to the market? Now, it's not about whether or not I, as an entrepreneur, get liquidity all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, how do I capitalize my company? Because as an owner, as you well know, you're going to do the biggest deals. You're going to bring in the best people, and you better capitalize your operation for now and in the future.
Right.
That's the job of the owner. That's where we take all the risks.
Mm-hmm.
And owners take those risks knowingly, sometimes begrudgingly, but they have to leverage that to know what is the next phase, whether it's responding to an unsolicited offer, whether it is positioning so that I'm always ready to attack an offer when it comes through the door, or I go out to the market and run a competitive process to see what makes most sense.
I think you hit on the part that people will lean on their existing bench. You know, they will call their accountant they've got a relationship with or their lawyer. But M&A is so, at least in my experience, and I want your input, like, why would somebody really have on their business bench intentionally an M&A advisor for that planning? Because answering that call from the lawyer's viewpoint, in my opinion, isn't the strongest.
Correct.
What's the hiccups that they could hit if they use their people that they know and not somebody really geared towards the industry, towards sales, towards, you know, how these deals can get put together?
A lot of this is strategy, Court.
Yeah.
So you're looking at the strategy of how you want to go to market. You do it when you set up your marketing and sales programs and campaigns. So you're developing strategy. You should be able to develop a strategy for how you look at the liquidity market.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is, when you're working with an M&A advisor, it's not just finding out what am I worth in the marketplace, but what is really happening in my marketplace, the markets that I'm in and the markets that I serve. Two different markets.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can make adjustments in my strategy of how I execute based on knowing what the ebb and flow of the markets are. And if I don't understand that, I'm not going to remain relevant. And so part of this is, and we've seen this over the last X number of years, between the pandemic, between supply chain challenges, between what's going on in Asia, between recession and inflation talks, between interest rates, everything in terms of the economy and the markets is changing. And if we're not relevant to understand what's going on with them, how do we adjust our levers every day?
I think that what I want people to think about is, look, they're running a company. So they got a day job and a half, 7 days a week. They got to do that, grow their company. Now they get the unsolicited offer and they need to know, are they relevant?
Mm-hmm.
I've always felt like, and I know certainly you taught me this, that having an advisor to do all of that while they're still tackling their day job.
Yeah.
So talk to us about, we've seen it 1,000 times, you know, friends and foe that have, you know, got the offer, take their eye off their day job, and then what happens?
The number one thing I tell clients that I work with is stay in job one. Don't let anything take you out of job one. Don't let me take you out of job one. When I engage with them as an executive advisor, we're talking about strategy at first, even if they get an unsolicited offer. The premise is, and I've worked with a lot of clients, Courtney, and you know some of them, that have come to the table and said, I've got this great offer. We're actually ready to accept it, and we think it would be terrific. We thought it would just be a little check and balance to check in with you, just run it by you. And invariably what happens is they don't take the offer. We agree to do a little more market research. We agree to do a competitive positioning. And invariably, in some of those deals, the same buyer that had an offer on the table ends up being the ultimate buyer at a much higher price. Why? Because we prepared the company to be presented to the market. And it sounds as simple as that, but it's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of work to do. So one of the reasons people don't reach out to M&A advisors is, in general, this industry, investment bankers and so on, they'll reach out and talk to an owner, and it starts with financial statements. And they'll evaluate their financials, and they'll tell them everything that's wrong with the way they're doing their accounting. That doesn't necessarily delve into, how do you run your business? How do you make money? How do you manage your customers? Do you have concentration? Do you have a depth of bench with your team? Is there a codependency on you as the owner? Is there a codependency on any particular customer or supplier? There's 1,000 questions to go through from a strategy standpoint that, and you'll remember these, where you're going to fine tune and adjust. You're changing all the dials slightly in terms of how you're running the business. And now you've become far more appealing. Now you become far more sustainable, and you can position for growth in a stronger way. That's what appeals to buyers.
We got to unpack some of that. There was so much there. So when you interview that person that comes to you, can you tell right away who can get a deal done versus who couldn't get a deal done? At what meeting do you know?
As an owner?
Yeah.
With them as an owner, you can get a sense for how well they know their business.
Sure.
And you can get a sense for whether or not they have a story. And we all know life is made up of stories. Mm-hmm. So the story, not necessarily of how they were founded or how they got started, but the story of where they're going and what they're doing and where is their meaning in what they're doing. And if they can tell that story, that's strong. And if they can't, that's okay. Let's develop it. Because when you look at the market, buyers are interested in your financial performance, of course, but nobody wants to buy a company that they have to revamp. Well, they're certainly not going to pay a premium for it. They'll buy it, but they'll buy it at bargain basement dollars. And then they'll put their own best practice to it, and they'll reap the rewards. But as an owner who wants to leverage what they've built, they have to be prepared to go to market. They need to know their story for today and in the future.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of answered it, but I think that a lot of times these businesses, you know, the leader of the business might be a really good salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can tell a great story, but maybe they don't have a strong financial partner.
And their numbers aren't strong.
Yeah. Or the flip. We can find companies that have a really nice balance sheet, but don't have a strong positioning.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder, you know, I know in my own personal experience, the patience to go through the process, that developing the book you just talked about, that takes time.
Yeah.
And it's strategy and time and, you know, it's preparing to go to the prom. You don't go to the prom on Saturday and you start last Saturday. Mm-hmm. It's just a process. And I think some anxious salespeople can mess that up.
Yeah.
Because they want to drive something quicker. And I like this idea that, you know, staying in job one. So what happens when that person doesn't stay in job one? We've seen it 1,000 times, but kind of walk me through, you know, everything's going great and they get out of job one.
They get out of job one, their team isn't sure what's happening. They're not sure if they're going to communicate with their team in terms of what they're trying to do. So in the absence of communication, people make up their own stories. The team gets defocused or they take their eye off the ball and we have a down quarter or we miss a deal. And now we've got to claw our way back. In the middle of a process, the worst thing that can happen is you have a downturn. A downturn in your performance, you lose big clients, you don't hit your numbers, and the folks that are interested in the company are wondering, why is that? And anything that happens, if it's not justifiable and defensible, it's a problem. It's a problem. So if the reason is you took your eye off the ball and you stepped out of job one, go back into job one and fix it. Let's get it done. So it's really critical that performance is consistent, that performance continues to grow.
Yeah, I remember you kind of coaching me with that lesson and just taking it so seriously because surprises, I remember you saying, surprises never pay.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea that, you know, we've heard it with, you know, PE and some strategic buyers where they put an offer on the table and then they start working backwards. And why do they start working backwards? They find out more. They find out about concentration. They find out about seasonality. Or they find out something, they've got headwinds.
Yeah.
And headwinds can be created by the market or headwinds can be created by us. And so this idea that you hire, and I just love this idea, you hire people to do strategic work for your business so that you do what is your genius.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't do what I do at the business, but I can't do what you do to help my business get where it's going. So in this market, you know, you mentioned, you know, China and interest rates and, you know, lots of roll-ups. What do you see as things people should be thinking about? Because it seems to me it's hard to stay small right now. So why do people, you know, obviously there's a million reasons people transact businesses. in the very worst case, they get sick.
Mm-hmm.
Too late. They hadn't thought about it. It's hard to plan for. Sometimes they're talking about succession, and that's important. And then sometimes they grow it to sell. But there might be another reason, just that it's hard to grow that bottom number in a market where inflation is so high, where costs of labor so high, cost of services are so high. So how can you reframe that for people listening that maybe a transaction isn't just the end?
Oh, that's funny, Courtney, the end. A transaction is never really the end. There are owners that love what they do and want to continue doing it, just simply want to take all the risk off the table. And they still have that subject matter expertise and that conviction. What they want to do is have a partner come in, either on a minority level or a majority level, and help capitalize the business and bring in best practices. So the story that you always hear about is, I got a call from a private equity group that's interested in our market sector, and they want to add us to their portfolio. And everyone has illusions of grandeur that that's going to be terrific. And a lot of times it is. It's wonderful because they bring in best practices. They bring in the best practices and the capital if you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And if they trust in you to be stewards of their investment, and they will be great partners. And as soon as you take your eye off the ball or falter, they're going to step in and take over. And that's the fear that a lot of entrepreneurs have. But the upfront planning can help you avoid that. So if you're looking at the market the right way, and if your plan for the business is strong and addresses the what ifs, what happens when we lose that customer? What happens when our suppliers need to be changed out? What happens if we can't get parts and our lead time is killing us? All of those things require contingencies. A lot of folks are just doing it on the fly dynamically without planning. So when the plan is in place and you execute on it, you demonstrate a justifiable path.
Am I right in sort of phrasing that, you know, if you have PE, which you just described, come in and maybe offer capital and best practices, frame up for us what a strategic buyer would look like.
Sure. And you have experience with that in a great way. A strategic buyer is generally someone who is trying to manage between organic growth in their business and acquisitive growth. We have tapped some of the markets we already have. Now we're looking for adjacent markets or ability to bring in products where we can cross-sell and gain insights there. So a strategic player could be a competitor, could be someone who's servicing the same type of products in a different sector or market. And they're looking to acquire a company to come in and be part of their fold. Sometimes that works great. Sometimes cultures clash. Sometimes operations clash. And the integration of those two businesses is where the focus needs to be. But if a strategic player comes to the table, generally it's a slower process because they take their time and they really analyze what's going on. They want to match up technology. They want to match up operations, HR, culture, financial accounting, all the things that are going to mesh together, and they're looking for economies of scale. It is an interesting conversation when folks do that. A lot of times they keep their cards close to their chest. Why? Because I don't want to let you know too much right now, because if this falls apart, I don't want you to come after my customers. I don't want you to come after my markets. And so there's a paranoia that entrepreneurs have that sometimes prevents them from going down that path strong.
Interesting, because I always thought, I mean, in our own situation, the task at hand was one of our customers, as you know, want us to be in China and transact business in China. And I'm just that, you know, smart enough where I'm like, oh, that can't be that hard. We buy from China. Why can't we sell in China? And it turns out, you know, everything with enough time and money can be done. Mm-hmm. Everything. And sometimes you can get there faster with a company, a strategic that's got that in place. So I'd always heard that when you partner up with a strategic buyer, they bring contacts, resources, relevant help to your business that can help you go faster, versus private equity, which does have best practices, has all the money mm-hmm. in the world, but may not have the leads, sure. the connections. Do you think, is that a fair and relevant statement in today's world as a way for people to think about the two different, I mean, there's multiple, but those two categories of buyers?
Very fair and relevant, Courtney. If a private equity group has a portfolio holding that's in the market that you're in, then you may have that same benefit. So there's a strategic who's owned by a private equity, which means you get the best of what you just described, but you also get the capital they have behind them and the reach into the rest of the industry that they have. If it's just a strategic coming to the table, they may be very tight in terms of how they invest their capital. They're looking at gaining an economy of scale. They're not going to pour capital into your operation unless it's defensible. And so it depends on how you set up the plan for going forward, for integrating products, for integrating services, for integrating teams. Are we going to merge our sales organization? Are we going to do separate marketing? Are we going to be able to cross-pollinate? All of those things matter in terms of how you will be able to take advantage of 1 + 1 = 10. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't.
And part of that is the story, you know, either them or the entrepreneur walking them through how this could work. Mm-hmm. How does your organization plus our organization equal 10? Mm-hmm. And getting that excitement yeah. around the deal, which is important. And yeah. I think, you know, left behind the advisor, the owner still has to come out and sort of, yeah. you know, be brought to the table and then put back in the closet to do job number one.
Well, one of the most important things in that process that you just described is for your advisor or someone on your team, stay in job one for yourself. Someone has to be able to go around the other side of that negotiating table, work with that strategic or that private equity to help them see who you are. They need to help them see your story. So you need someone who understands strategy, who can articulate how it applies and will cross-pollinate into their company and how they take advantage of it. Because a buyer evaluating a company for sale is looking at numbers and they're going to make evaluation based on what they see, not what they know. And they're going to base it on how you're doing now. Until they hear the story of how this works, their investment premise is very simple. If you can expand their investment premise and build the story of what they could possibly create if you add these two together, you start to create possibilities for them that raises valuation. That's where you get premium values. So you need someone who can not only speak about what you're doing, but tell your story in a way that meshes with each buyer.
By nature, entrepreneurs are control freaks, and mm-hmm. yet they've hired an advisor to be their intermediary. The way that I really came to grips with, you know, we all think we can do everything better, mm-hmm. but A, you know why people hire PR is because when you tell my story, it sounds better than when I tell my story. People listen harder. When you have an advisor telling your company story, it sounds better than if I just come and toot my own horn. And once you realize that that shield, that sort of guard between mm-hmm. you and the potential acquirers is really the way to raise the value mm-hmm. because everything, you know, obviously the storytelling is so important in your role, but it really, there's no holes they can poke in it because it's not the salesperson standing up there telling them mm-hmm. how great they are. And so you talk about, you know, pushing up valuations. I always felt like in your role, part, you know, it's a huge expense, but the way you pay for yourself is by pointing out where 1 + 1 = 10 yeah. and showing, giving the storytelling path so that people understand, you know, this is not add this company to this and we just do the same thing yeah. again next year. No, we're throwing igniter gas on this mm-hmm. and getting both teams to go quicker.
There's a way to run a merger and acquisition process where they go and work with an investment bank and they just run a competitive process. They run an auction process. Mm-hmm. And that's just a
math equation.
Turn the crank. Yeah, it's a math equation. Doing it from a point of strategy and intentionality is a very different process. And
yes.
because this is something that most entrepreneurs only do, well, many do it once in a lifetime. Some do it multiple times. But for the most part, this is one of those things where I have my net worth invested in all of this. So this is everything I've put into it. And the liquidity of this event is going to fund the rest of my life.
Yep.
And everything that my dreams were made of. So it's really important. So yes, folks look at an advisor, whether it's a deal team or it's a merger and acquisition advisor, as being an expense that they look at, but it's a transaction that is going to change lives.
100%. And I mean, in my mind, everything you just talked about, like knowing the company, knowing the players, knowing mm-hmm. where the potholes are, in the strategy, at least my equation, young entrepreneurs, let's call it, whether they're mm-hmm. young or their company's young, you don't sit around spending that much time on strategy because you also have to pay the light bulb.
You have to execute.
You got to execute. And so if you're doing strategy and what if sessions all day long, then you're not executing. But if you're executing all day long, which is job number one, mm-hmm. as we talked about, you may not get to the whole what if about this business and could we yeah. steer it here and if we added it to this, what that would look like.
Yeah.
It was so helpful to have a partner who didn't have to do execution mm-hmm. but could bring it up to 60,000 feet and yeah. say, what's your life plan? Where are you driving your life? And how does this transaction or this planning or strategy get you closer yeah. to that, whether you do a deal or not? So there's a ton of value.
Now you're getting holistic on it now.
Yeah,
this is really, really strong.
The value, I think when people realize, all their cash is tied up in this mm-hmm. business, all their risk, the amount of risk they have, the more, a good business over time gets bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, and we've seen this a lot with our friends, where all of a sudden they realize how much money they had tied up in this business, mm-hmm. and it was almost not fiduciary to their family to not at least have this conversation
yeah.
and look at how to secure that. Because if you took away that capital that was tied up in this business and something went wrong, and it happens, businesses can go sideways, mm-hmm. go wrong, go down. I mean, if we haven't learned anything over the last 2 years, it's like life changes. So how are you planning for that? And I just, I'm just curious if you can point to, where is there like a timeline in the entrepreneur's journey that, do they wait till they get that phone call or that, prom invite? Or is there a point that somebody like yourself can insert themselves into a business knowing that they have a goal to transact? Mm. And what does that horizon look like?
You're asking about a how-to, and I think it's a great question. An entrepreneur who's in the trench every day, they live in the valleys because the hills take care of themselves, right? So they live in the valleys trying to execute and take care of business and solve problems. They're doing that with their team, their customers, and their entire marketplace. The more holistic perspective of who do I want to be in this world? How do I want to spend my time? Where do I want to invest the monies that I'm making? And where do I want to volunteer? What philanthropic work do I want to do? That holistic perspective is really important for any individual. For company owners who are selling, they get very myopic on the value of the transaction, and they don't think about what's next. And what's next is really, really important. So it is important for them to give thought to it. In terms of preparing now, while you're running your business today and executing, it's really helpful to get third opinion, outside assessment, whether it's a merger and acquisition advisor, it's a strategic consultant, someone that you trust, someone that is objective, and someone that's knowledgeable, that can come in and define some of these things for you. We talk about terms like customer concentration and profitability and sustainable growth and depth of bench, of talent, and whether or not there's a codependency on owners. All these things are really factors that a buyer looks at to determine whether or not they want to be part of this going forward. And how you manage that and how you present it and how it's built into your story will determine how appealing you are. And it also dictates valuation.
Yeah, sure.
If 80% of your revenue is coming from one sector of the industry or even one large client, that's a lot of risk. And if you don't diversify that, you're going to be very limited in terms of who's going to be interested in that, because that relationship may only be tied to you as the owner. And once you're out, who knows what will happen to it. So as an owner, we manage growth, we manage expenses, and we manage risk. Yeah. It's this big triangle, and we're doing a balancing act across all of them. And we have to minimize risk and mitigate it where we can. We have to manage expenses and make sure our cash flow is strong, but our eye is always toward growth. And that's the owner's dilemma. How much of your time do you spend in any one of those areas? Where do you bring in outside resources to help you? That's the plan. Now, how you execute on it is different for each individual. Some folks think they have it covered. Some folks don't want any outside help. They use their internal team and their internal board of directors to manage that. That all works great as long as you're doing it. Engagement is the key there.
Yep.
You have to be engaged.
And intentionality.
Yeah.
We both do not like that word, happenstance, and I think the opposite of intentionality can be happenstance.
It is.
Do you want to plan your life, plan your business, plan your exit, or just
wait for somebody else to do it for you?